Zinni's message to the assembled Marine commanders that afternoon was, "You are about to get into something that is going to be tougher and more chaotic than you might think. I was worried that we didn't understand the importance of maintaining order, that we had to come in with sufficient forces to freeze the situation, to understand that when we're ripping the guts out of an authoritarian regime, you got responsibility for security, services, everything else. You have to be prepared to handle all that." He also warned the Marines that in such situations, the U.S. government tends to look to the military for solutions. The other caution I gave them was, don't count on it when somebody tells you, well, the State Department's got that, or OSD's planning for that. Don't believe them. You're going to get stuck with it, so have a plan. This is the desert crossing philosophy. You're going to end up being the stucky on this. On December 10th and 11th, the Army staff at the Pentagon convened about 24 military experts, Middle East area specialists, diplomats, and intelligence officials at the Army War College to look at the missions that the service likely would face in post-war Iraq. Read now, with the benefit of hindsight, the report the group produced clearly is stunning in its prescience. The possibility of the United States winning the war and losing the peace is real and serious, they wrote in a lapel-gripping tone that was an unusual departure for government experts giving their bosses unwelcome advice. Thinking about the war now and the occupation later is not an acceptable solution. That was what the Army War College group had seen happen with Afghanistan, and some members of that group were hearing from friends at Central Command that the same screw-up was happening again. They also delivered a clear warning about the fragile state of the Iraqi economy, something that Bush administration officials would insist after the invasion had been a rude surprise. Iraq had been strained by decades of misrule, wars, and sanctions, they observed. If the United States assumes control of Iraq, it will therefore assume control of a badly battered economy. The writers repeatedly emphasized that Iraq was going to be tougher than the administration thought, or at least was admitting publicly. Successful occupation will not occur unless the special circumstances of this unusual country are heeded, they warned. They specifically advised against the two major steps that Ambassador L. Paul Bremer III would pursue in 2003 after being named to run the U.S. occupation. The Iraqi army should be kept intact because it could serve as a unifying force in a country that could fall apart under U.S. control. In a highly diverse and fragmented society like Iraq, the military is one of the few national institutions that stresses national unity as an important principle. To tear apart the army in the war's aftermath could lead to the destruction of one of the only forces for unity within the society. They likewise were explicit in warning against the sort of top-down debathification that Bremer would mandate. Rather, they recommended following the example of the U.S. authorities in post-World War II Germany, who used a bottom-up approach by having anti-Nazi Germans in every town review detailed questionnaires filled out by every adult German, and then determining one by one who would have their political and economic activities curtailed. The report received an enthusiastic response from the Army, said Conrad Crane, the Army historian running the group. He believes it also influenced the thinking of some Army generals preparing for the invasion of Iraq. But all that was preaching to the converted. The group heard very little from the Office of the Secretary of Defense or from Central Command. It was not clear to us until much later how unsuccessful General Shinseki and his staff had been in shaping the final plans, Crane said later. Then, in mid-2003, after the occupation had gotten off to a fumbled start, and Franks had left Central Command and retired from the Army, Crane was told that Abizaid, the new commander, was handing the report to everyone he met and telling them to read it. It was small consolation. What is remarkable is that again and again during the crucial months before the invasion, such warnings from experts weren't heeded or even welcomed. Almost no Middle Eastern experts inside the military were consulted on the war plan, in part because the plan was produced on a very close-hold basis that involved few people, and even then, only parts of it were shown to most of those involved.